There is hope for America. I'll explain why today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to say this out loud. I want to say this clearly. I want to encourage you to say it out loud with me if you can. There is hope for America. Let's try that one more time. There is hope for America. This is Michael Brown. Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. That is the number to call. I am a realist. I am one that is constantly looking at problems in our nation. I am one that is constantly writing about problems in our nation, about major concerns, about major issues, about things that are going in the wrong direction. I'm not naive. I'm not sticking my head in the sand. I am not just some wild-eyed optimist who is cut off from reality. No, I'm an absolute realist. And the ultimate reality for me is who God is and what God says. The ultimate determination of reality to me is not circumstances alone, but what God says about those circumstances. And I'm convinced, as messed up as things are here in America today, as many deep problems as we have in America today, as many of them are absolutely systemic and deep and long-term bad and wrong, I believe that change can still come through the gospel. I believe that change can come, that it is not too late for the nation. I'm going to be speaking to a guest today. Oh, halfway through this first hour, I'm going to be speaking to a guest about the issues of changing the nation and what can be done. But as you know, I believe that revival can still come to America. And I believe what's critical, friends, please hear me, nothing abstract, nothing about the millennial kingdom or 1,000 years from now or anything like that. I'm talking about here and now. It is incumbent on us to stand for what is right today if we want to see positive change tomorrow. It is incumbent on us to stand for what is right today if we want to see positive change tomorrow. So what I'm going to be encouraging you to do in this first hour of the broadcast today is to do what you can do to make a difference. To do what you can do to do the right thing, to do what you can do to raise your kids or to live as a single person, to do what you can do on your job, to do what you can do as an educator, to do what you can do in social media. Friends, it's not just hype when I write every month to our monthly supporters and I close every letter by saying, together, we're making a difference. Jesus is Lord. Those are not just empty words. I know there's a lot of discouragement all around us. I know it's easy to have the mindset, look, we've been on a steady moral decline, a steady spiritual decline, and it's evident that we will not turn back. Just like someone maybe that's 95 years old, weak and declining health, and then they get hit with a serious disease on top of it, okay, in the natural, you know, they're going down and they're only going to get worse. They will never be as healthy as they were when they were 20 years old. I understand that. But God, when it comes to the nation, but God. And there are signs of encouragement as well. We will be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for being part of the broadcast. Hey, if you want to stay discouraged, you may want to turn this off. If you don't want to be challenged, you may want to turn this off. You know, look, let's be realistic, friends. Change is not going to come in any area of life if we just kind of sit back and let things happen. You will not change your diet. You will not change your fitness. You will not change your spiritual habits. You will not change your mental habits. You will not change your work habits. You will not change your life habits if you just kind of sit back and let things happen. It's just like you bring in a trainer. You've got money to hire a trainer. A friend says, hey, I want to get you in shape. I'm hiring a trainer for you. You're like all excited. Cool. I can't wait. Then that trainer's going to push you. And that trainer is going to teach you the meaning of no pain, no gain. And that trainer is going to talk to you about diet and lifestyle and things like that. In other words, yes, change can come, but we must be challenged to see it come to pass. 866-348-7884. So if you don't want to be encouraged, turn off the broadcast now. Conversely, if you want to be encouraged but not challenged, turn off the broadcast. If you want to be encouraged and you're willing to be challenged, I have just what you need today. There's an important article by Rod Dreher, conservative commentator, and it is published in the American Conservative, on LGBT, evangelical colleges at bargaining stage. Bargaining stage. And Rod Dreher quotes Southern Baptist leader Denny Burke, who speaks of four stages of evangelical acceptance of gay marriage. And I'll explain exactly what's going on here in a moment. It has to do with Christian colleges, evangelical colleges, being put under pressure to capitulate by the government to the goals of gay activism and what that could mean. So Denny Burke, and Roger quotes him, lays out four stages in evangelical capitulation. The first, every evangelical starts here, opposing gay marriage. It's wrong. It's not according to Scripture. It's harmful to society. We therefore oppose it. That's stage one. Stage two, oppose taking a stand on the question. Well, we don't want to offend. I remember watching a TV show with Nancy. I believe it was Larry King. And there were a number of guests on the show. Tim LaHaye and his wife were there. Brian McLaren was there, a number of others, and they were each asked their views on gay marriage, homosexuality. And Brian McLaren answered, what hurts me is however I answer this, I'm going to offend someone. Rough paraphrase of what he said. If I say it's wrong for this reason, I'm going to offend and hurt gay people. If I say it's not wrong, I'm going to offend and hurt traditional Christians. That was his point. And he ended up not answering. I'm not surprised. I was not surprised to see not long after that he came out in support of gay marriage. Stage three, affirm gay marriage. And then stage four, vilify traditional marriage proponents. You now become an ally of LGBT activism. I was at a scholarly conference over 20 years ago. I was speaking to a professor there who was a well-known Old Testament scholar himself and was a professor at one of the nation's leading evangelical seminaries. And he told me that their viewpoint was they did not ordain women into ministry, or they did not train women for pastoral ministry in their denomination. And they were having some pressure from the accrediting association over that, but they were taking their stand because they believed it was right. He said, but what's coming next is the homosexual issue. This is over 20 years ago. And he was saying that if we don't capitulate here, that we could end up losing our accreditation. And he said, so be it. We're going to do what's right. That is the biblical way to approach these things. You may put me under pressure to compromise. it may be expedient for me to compromise. It may seem to be the path of least resistance to compromise. It may even seem to be the pragmatic way, compromise. But it is not God's way. It is not best in the light of eternity. It is serious compromise in God's sight, and therefore we cannot compromise. If we lose our accreditation, so be it. If we lose our school, so be it. If we lose our lives, so be it. I'm talking about the ultimate sacrifice for the gospel and how we must think as believers. So, Roger Ayer is pointing back to an article by Carl Truman from a few days back, in which Christian liberal arts colleges will either violate Christian orthodoxy and submit to the zeitgeist on LGBT issues, the spirit of the age, or accept that they will pay a heavy price for fidelity. And there was one professor at a Christian college who took issue with this. And he said this, while the CCCU, I'm due with Christian denominations, accreditation, etc., affirmed a traditional stance on marriage in 2015, it eventually developed a collaborative membership category for institutions that disagreed on that issue, but otherwise met consortium criteria. And despite a tense confrontation in 2016 in the California State Legislature, where Christian colleges lobbied against a proposed anti-discrimination bill, by the end of last year, the leaders of the CCCU and National Association of Evangelicals were promoting a Fairness for All initiative to reconcile LGBT rights and religious liberty. But such conversations and compromises are precisely what horrify conservatives like Carl Truman, a church history professor at Westminster Theological Seminary. Interestingly, my colleague, Old Testament scholar, was at that time when we talked over 20 years ago, also a professor at Westminster Theological Seminary. So the fact is this, if someone, metaphorically speaking, puts a gun to your head, I'm not talking about someone threatening your life, I'm talking about metaphorically speaking, puts a gun to your head. In other words, do this or else suffer the consequences. Your school must do X, Y, Z to comport with the goals of gay activism, or to comport with government-backed standards having to do with gay activism. You do this, or you lose this, 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 this. It's really a simple question for us. It's a very, very simple question for us. Namely this, what is right in God's sight? Not what will it cost, but what is right in God's sight? Roger Ayer ends his article, and I plan to write on this, maybe tonight to go out tomorrow, that there is a principle that was put forth, I believe, by a Catholic thinker, where orthodoxy is optional, orthodoxy will sooner or later be proscribed. It will be forbidden. And Ayer says this, you watch, within 10 to 20 years, every college involved in this conversation that believes that Christian orthodoxy on the LGBT issue is optional will have become a college where Christian orthodoxy is anathema. In other words, you shift on this and you say, well, we don't have to hold to a particular one. We don't have to hold to a particular standard. We don't have to do that. And we can bend a little here and bend a little there. And yeah, if it's a matter of having an LGBT club on our school, even though we're a Christian campus, if it's a matter of putting out certain gay-affirming statements, if it's a matter of changing our moral code, if it's a matter of changing some of our housing codes, hey, we'd rather do that and keep our school. Dreher is saying within 10 to 20 years, not only will Christian orthodoxy not be there on the campus, it will be mocked on the campus. Whether his time frame is right or not, what is certain is this. It is the Jesus principle. If you save your soul, you lose it. If you lose your soul for the gospel, you find it. What exactly does that mean? I want to explain that on the other side of the break. But hey, while we're at it, Princeton University, one of many fine universities in America that was founded by Christians for Christian purposes, now when you are applying or filling out forms at Princeton, The university is giving you six options for picking your gender. According to reports I have here in front of me on Fox News, and they include the six: cisgender, so that would be heterosexual; genderqueer, gender nonconforming, that's one; transgender; man, woman; other. You have to have the other, because you can't only have five or six categories. That's too limiting. Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. But hey, why not? Once you open up the door, once perception becomes reality, once standards of truth and righteousness don't matter, why not? We'll be right back. And I've got some encouragement from the White House.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yes, this is back in June. LifeSite News reported this. Hasbro CEO, so Hasbro Toys, we eliminated the old delineation of gender to be more inclusive. Yeah, we look at our brands more inclusively than ever. Hasbro CEO Brian Goldner told The Hollywood Reporter recently. In fact, we eliminated the old delineation of gender, and their Ken dolls I'm looking at with man buns. Now, it's not to say that you can't have a man bun. That's not the issue. The issue is eliminating the old delineation of gender. You know that old idea that the world basically divides into male, female? That old idea, that antiquated notion that the vast majority of human beings on the planet are either biologically male, biologically female, without any ambiguity. Yeah, that got rid of that antiquated idea for sure. You know, and boys in blue and girls in pink. I was thinking about this. So maybe you'll have a new line of toys, G.I. Joanne. Yeah. Instead of G.I. Joe, G.I. Joanne. And then maybe instead of Princess Barbie or whatever, you know, Princess Robert or something. Well, why not? You drag queen, drag princess, why not? Hey, friends, this is where things are going. But I believe that these actions, these moves are ultimately self-destructive. Why? Because they fly in the face of reality. That God made us male and female. That's not going away. That's the rhythm of life. That's reality. You don't need to be socialized for men to be attracted to women and women to be attracted to men. You don't. That's going to happen. And gender distinctions are in our blood. And while some people may be confused over it, those things are going to happen. Okay, I said I have some encouragement for you. And then I want to explain more fully the meaning of if you save your life or save your soul, you lose it. If you lose it for the gospel, you find it. There is a Bible study currently taking place in the White House. And some are saying the like has not been seen in 100 years. Key members of President Trump's cabinet are taking part in weekly Bible study classes. CBN News, Christian Broadcast Network, reported on it. Others are picking up on it now. We've known about this, but hearing more. Regular attendees at the session include Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price, Energy Secretary Rick Perry, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, Agricultural Secretary Sonny Perdue, and CIA Director Mike Pompeo. Vice President Mike Pence and Attorney General Jeff Sessions also attend when their schedule permits. This is something that has not happened. Some are saying it's the most evangelical cabinet in memory. Now, if you have massive problems with President Trump, please read my latest article on the old lady, the devil, and Donald Trump. Some articles, it gets posted on different sites. Some have changed the title to Love More Hate Him, God is Using Donald Trump. But in point of fact, whether you think he's a genius and the greatest gift to America since Reagan, whether you think he's a madman, whether you think he's an idiot, whether you think he's a saint, whether you think he's the devil, all right, whatever you think, it's undeniable that things are happening through him that are positive. Yeah, you talk about the damage, the problem. I understand all that. But it's clear that there are positive things happening as well, undeniably positive things that are happening. Steps in the right direction, court appointees from the Supreme Court down, decisions that are being made that LGBT activists are up in arms over. Oh, I don't delight in the fact that they're up in arms over these things, but I'm saying that there are decisions that are being made that are ultimately going in the direction of fairness and equity and moral sobriety. That's positive. That's all positive. The fact that you've got these different cabinet members on a regular basis who are having a Bible study, that we've been told now from several different sources that on a number of occasions before making major decisions that Donald Trump prays with Mike Pence. That, to me, is encouraging. My new book, Saving a Sick America, is as realistic as they get. But every page, once you get into the heart of the book, filled with hope and practical suggestions, practical guidelines, practical tips for what we can do as individuals and families to bring about gospel-based moral and cultural transformation. And with God, all things are possible. What did Jesus say? What did he mean? The saying, if you save your life, you lose it. If you lose your life for my sake in the gospel, you find it. And that saying occurs over and over in the Gospels, Matthew 10, Matthew 16, Mark 8, Luke 9, in a slightly different form, Luke 14, Luke 17, slightly different form, John 12. It is a theme over and over. Here's something that I think will explain it for you. Martin Luther King, when he was 36 years old, was giving a speech in Selma, Alabama. You may have heard me reference this before. Because he advocated for nonviolent resistance, but took stands on issues, that meant that many people were getting attacked. They were taking nonviolent stands, but violence was coming against them. And some of the civil rights leaders said, this is not a good strategy. It's too costly. We need to step back from the challenges and the confrontations. If we're going to have this nonviolent approach, which they appreciated, they felt we can't take certain stands because we're getting attacked and hurt and so on. So he addressed these concerns and gave a speech. Selma, Alabama is at a church service. The building's packed out. People standing outside listening. It's quite a scene. Maybe you can find it on internet. And he says, if a man happens to be 36 years old as I am today, some great opportunity passes before you. I'm paraphrasing. Some great opportunity passes before you. You're 36 years old to take a stand for what's right and true. But you say to yourself, if I do this, I might lose my job. If I do this, they may send the police dogs after me. If I do this, they might hurt my family. So you withdraw. You stand back. He said, you may go on breathing until you're 80. But when you finally die at 80, that cessation of breathing is just going to announce the earlier death of the spirit. He said, a man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is right. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for that which is true. A man dies when he refuses to stand up for justice. And King said, so we're going to do what's right. We're going to take a stand. And they could send the police dogs on us. They could attack us. They can kill us. They can do what they want. But we are determined to be free. It's an incredible speech. And to me, it articulates what Jesus is saying. You see, when you bow down to the spirit of the age, when you bow down to that which is expedient, when you compromise your principle for personal gain or to preserve your life, you may do those things in the natural, but you've lost your real soul in doing so. You become a slave to the things of this age and to the opinions of this age, to the people of this age. You become a slave. But when you do the will of God, you may lose things in this world, but you truly find your soul, find your life. If you haven't yet gone to savingasickamerica.com, go there. Check out the free ebook offer, 5 Ways to Pray for America, when you pre-order. All the instructions at savingasickamerica.com. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Hey, be sure to go to AskDrBrown.org and check out my latest videos. We address questions like, do babies who die go to heaven? Why don't most Jews believe in Jesus? My article, The Old Lady, the Devil, and Donald Trump, Do New DNA Discoveries Really Disprove the Bible? All there at AskDrBrown, AskDrBrown.org. So be sure to check those out for yourself. Also, my teaching from earlier in this week, where we got into looking at versions of the Bible, starting with the King James Version, strengths and weaknesses of the King James. That's over 40 minutes. That's on our website as well, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. I want to continue the discussion about America and why I believe there's hope for America with my guest, Travis Witt. He's the pastor of Gilboa Christian Church in Louisa County, Virginia. He's a member of the State Central Committee of the Republican Party of Virginia, and he heads up American Transformation Company, ATC, 501c3 ministry that believes Christians must go into their community and influence all, quote, seven mountains of culture, arts, business, church, doctors, education, family, and government. And ATC helps teams or companies identify local concerns, develop a comprehensive 25-year strategy, and implement short-term goals that produce significant results in 2 to 3 years. We're talking practical, gospel-based change here. Travis, welcome to the Line of Fire.
For that introduction, I appreciate it very much.
Sure thing. Hey, Travis, a big question before we get into some specifics. Many people, when they hear, quote, the seven mountains of culture, immediately they draw back. They think, oh, no, this is some heresy. It's the seven mountains theology where the church is going to take over the world and we're going to establish a theocracy and beat people over the head with the Bible if they don't agree with us. I've always heard this in a very innocuous way. Here are the key areas of culture. Let's be salt and light in all of them. How do you respond to the heresy charges and the fear-mongering that surrounds the Seven Mountains teaching?
Great question. I think the best way to respond to that is this. We are called to influence culture, and the best way to influence culture is to recognize that two individuals or two groups of individuals will influence culture. It will either be Christians or individuals who are not Christians. And so culture immediately derives itself from those two groups. Now, directly under that large group of culture, you can divide that culture out into seven different reflections of culture, which would be arts and media, the business, church, medicine or doctors, education, family, and government. And our perspective and the world's perspective should be that the church is responsible for being salt and light to at least speak into those different spheres of influence or different mountains, and in the process of speaking into it, they give salt and light or clarity to a morality that can make those organizations, those groups, or those spheres of influence much more productive and much more structured. And then if you remove Christians from media, well, you see what you get. If you remove Christians and their influence, not in the takeover, but just to be influential in making them better for everyone living in that part of the culture.
All right, this was just the briefest of introductions, friends. We're going to dive into this in depth with Travis Witt. I'm going to ask him for some practical thoughts and maybe some firsthand examples of positive change that has come through Christians saying, well, here we are. Let's do something. Let's make a difference. We will be right back.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. 866-348-7884. If you'd like to weigh in, my guest, Travis Witt, a pastor who leads the America Transformation Company. Travis, you said that we are called to influence culture. Some Christians say we are simply called to preach the gospel and get people saved for eternal life because this world is always going to be evil and we're on a steady moral decline. I'm sure you've heard that before. How do you respond to that?
Well, if Christians are to be just involved in preaching the gospel, and we should, and so oftentimes the best way to preach the gospel is indirectly in the way you live. But when you find and see what is happening in our culture where good is now being described as evil, and evil is now being described as good with Isaiah 5:20, and you recognize that evil is there because the church is not influencing the responsibility of culture. And if you look at politics, and again, that's one of those areas that seems to be such a hesitation, the purpose of politics and government is to punish evil and to support good. And if you are involved in supporting good, you have to know what good is. So for us just to reflect on an evangelical perspective, which is certainly accurate, and then leave that to be the only thing that we do, then we fall short of missing the opportunity of making a cultural difference in every aspect. And if God's word says that every place your foot steps, you are to take authority and it's your territory, well, then I believe that's exactly the way we need to do it.
Yeah, what's interesting is I could just break it down to the Great Commission being to make disciples. So the question is, how do disciples live? Once you've led someone to the Lord and they've opened their hearts to God and you're teaching them what's right and what's wrong, well, how do they apply that? How does a husband apply that who's been an alcoholic, violent husband? Now he's a disciple. How does he live? How does he raise his kids? How does he relate to his wife? How does he behave on the job? What social responsibilities does he feel? Of course, change is going to come. And whether we apply Old Testament verses about taking ground or just look at Great Commission, discipling nations, certainly part of our calling. So let's break this down now.
Sure.
It's easy to be abstract and have great vision, but being practical, day-to-day, specific is not always as easy. So you talk about a 25-year plan and then 2 to 3 year steps that can be taken to bring about change. So give me an example of something that you've done or a company or a ministry you've worked with that targeted a specific area and that has seen some changes happening.
Well, good. That's a great question. In one of the counties in Virginia, the sheriff in this county asked the church to step up and start praying for the opioid addiction that was occurring in his county. They got together, strategically are praying on a regular basis, once a week at a particular time.